Part 9, Chapter 6. It was an intense hum of intent men in the room of the old mining town near the lode. Several groups were hard at work. It had amused the Scots very much to take over the offices of the Empire Dauntless Mining Corporation. The building had been almost intact, and when cleaned up, made an acceptable operations room. Johnny half suspected that somebody had rebuilt the town after the lead load mine had played out. It was too unlike other towns. He tried to figure out why anyone would reconstruct a town after its ore was gone, but evidence certainly showed someone had. Next door was a place called the Bucket of Blood Saloon that the parson had gravely put off limits. It still had its glasses and mirrors intact, and paintings of nearly nude dancing girls and cupids could dimly be made out. Across the street was an office labeled Wells Fargo, and another one labeled Jail. They all lived in the London Palace Elite Hotel, which had labeled suites named after men who must have been famous in mining. Three of the old widows queened it over a coal-burning galley, Angus had explained to them. It had running water. Luxury. The Empire Dauntless offices contained what must have been working models of the mine, and they had found history pamphlets in it that talked about the good old wild days of a boom camp and bad men. Also, curious little leaflets that said tour schedules, and had a daily time and place scheduled for a bank holdup. Paintings of prospectors and mine discoverers and bad men had been cleaned off and put back on the walls. Robert the Fox and two pilots were studiously going over possible plans to hijack an ore freighter. They had no craft that could possibly fly to Scotland or Europe, for their mine equipment could only go a few hundred miles. They had been going around and around this problem ever since the night the demon had told them about bomber drones. They felt they had a responsibility to alert not only the Scots, but other peoples they might find traces of. They dared not alert the cyclos. They were up to anything. To intercept in the air, leaving the cyclos to believe the freighter had gone down over the sea, was the only thing they kept coming up with. But to silence the cyclo pilot radio, to board a freighter plane to plane in midair, were some of the things they couldn't work out. Another group, two of the leaders who were off shift with Thor and Dunaldine and some of the miners, were going over mining progress. They had gotten down to the lode and were drifting along it inch by inch toward the cliff. The quartz they were taking out was pure and beautiful, but it had no gold in it. Johnny had explained to them from references that it was a lode with pockets. Wire gold veins only had pockets of gold every few hundred feet. It was not continuous valuable ore. They were getting tired of mining pure white quartz with no gold to show for it. They were trying to figure out how close they were to the fissure in the cliff. It had widened a tiny amount, which worried them. The historian, Dr. McDermott, was off by himself, chair tilted against a wall, reading industriously from things his scout had lately brought in from a collapsed school library in a little mining town. Johnny, Angus, the parson, and the schoolmaster were clustered over the parson's sketch of the valley. The positions of the live radiation points were in a line. At first, Johnny had thought it might be a vein of uranite popping to the surface at intervals. But the points were too regular.
They're roughly 100 feet apart, in a straight line.
They were staring at the map, thinking, when Dr. McDermott came over.
It's something funny you've got here, McTyler,
said the historian, shaking his book.
The Jinko guidebook was mistaken about the Air Force Academy.
Johnny shrugged.
They often said things just to please the cyclos.
But they called the Academy a primary defense base.
I know. They wanted it to sound big because it was the last battle fought on the planet.
But there was a primary defense base,
said the historian, shaking the book he held. Johnny looked at it. It was Regulations regarding and governing the evacuation of school children in event of atomic war, Department of Civil Defense.
Apparently, the children were to be kept in school until the town mayor was flown out of the city. No. Here it is. And that all orders thereafter shall be issued from the primary defense base.
But we don't know where that was.
The old man scuttled back to his pile of books.
Yes, we do.
He came back with a volume concerning congressional hearings into cost overruns of military budgets. McDermott opened the volume to where he had marked it. He read,
"Question by Senator Aldrich. The Secretary of Defense then freely admits that the overrun of $1.6 billion in the construction of the primary defense base in the Rocky Mountains was incurred without congressional authority. Is that correct, Mr. Secretary?"
McDermott showed Johnny and slapped the book shut.
"So the Chinkos were wrong while they were being right. There was a primary defense base, and it was in the Rocky Mountains."
He smiled primly and started back to his chair. Johnny went very still. The tomb. The iron doors, the dead troops on the stairs. The tomb.
"Dr. Mack!"
Johnny called.
"Come back here!"
He showed him the sketch.
"You told us a story once about a line of nuclear mines laid by the Queen's Own Highlanders from Dumbarton to Falkirk."
"Hey."
The historian nodded. He was looking at the sketch.
"Did you find some wrecked remains of cyclotanks?"
he said.
"No. But look, this line goes exactly across the exit from the pass from the lower plains. They're exactly spaced. They're in an exact straight line."
"But with no tanks,"
said the parson.
"They never exploded. Time has just made them fall apart."
"How did you guess this?"
said the historian. Johnny smiled. It was a little bit hard to speak. He indicated the sketch to cover his surge of emotion. After a moment, he said,
"That pass leads up from the western plain to the meadow. And behind that meadow, there is a canyon that goes up into the mountains. And way up that canyon is the primary defense base of the ancient government of man."
He filled in the rest of the sketch. Other groups had sensed something was happening. They began drifting over. Johnny felt like crying. He swallowed hard.
"I wondered where they sent all the uranium they'd mined. I knew it must be somewhere."
The parson touched his arm, not wanting him to run into a future failure with a crash.
"They would not have it in the base, laddie."
"But the base records will tell us where it is. It would have maps, wires of communication. I know we'll crack this there."
Angus had been staring at the sketch.
"Oh,"
he was saying to himself.
"Landmines. And I was just going to burrow in."
Robert the Fox was already gathering up those in charge to begin their expedition to the tomb. The historian was diving for references that would tell them the perils of entering tombs.
"Don't fret, laddie,"
said the parson to Johnny, who was just sitting there staring.
"Dawning will tell us if it's true.